Strangers, Season 4 of Strange and Unexplained officially begins next Thursday, May 2nd. Today, I'm treating you to an episode of my colleague Amber Hunt's true crime podcast, The Catalyst, exclusively available on Patreon at Grab Bag Collab, the network Amber and I started with our pal Amanda Rossman. The Catalyst is a podcast that looks at the upbringings and origin stories of some of history's most confounding killers, but with a twist. Because we want you to put aside what you already know about the case, Amber leaves out the killer's name until the end, so you can listen with fresh ears. Starting next week, I'll be offering Strange and Unexplained early and ad-free on Grab Bag Collab, where for just $5, you'll be getting The Catalyst, Dear Daisy, a podcast about secrets, my advice show, my Love is Blind recap podcast, Shut the F Up, Nick Lachey, with my co-host Ellen Marsh, as well as our quarterly shows like Rebecca Lavoie's trivia quiz game show, Other People's Problems. And for $8, you get Strange and Unexplained and Amber's Crimes of the Centuries early and ad-free. So check us out at patreon.com/grabbagcollab. Lab and see what we're all about. And now, lucky you, Amber Hunt's The Catalyst from Grab Bag Collab.
People interested in true crime are always baffled by the why. Why would someone do these things? What path in life could possibly have led them to commit such atrocious acts? In this podcast, we aim to explore the upbringings and backgrounds of some of history's worst criminals, but with a twist. Because we want you to set aside what you already know about them, we won't use their names until the end of the show, so you can listen anew and hopefully get insight into the question that haunts us the most. Why did they do it? Join us as we explore The Catalyst. The cattle town of Nakona has a population around 3,200 and is located near the Oklahoma border. It's one of those places where everyone seems to know each other. Once a thriving area, thanks to the famous Nakona Boot Company, the main street is now mostly abandoned. Only a handful of businesses are still open. A grocery store, a bank, a barber shop, a couple of gas stations, the feed store. And of course, the ubiquitous high school, community sports arena, more than a few churches, and a Dairy Queen. According to journalist Skip Hollinsworth, because there's little to do in Nakona, that branch of Dairy Queen is really popular. It regularly gets awards from the Texas Dairy Queen Operations Council for having the largest annual sales volume among the more than 600 franchises in the state. It was on December 11th, 2000, when 100-year-old Dorothy Jennings, a matriarch of one of the town's founding families, was admitted to Nakona General Hospital for constipation and dehydration. Jennings was known to be a demanding woman. The nursing staff reported she complained constantly, and if she didn't get what she wanted when she wanted it, she would spit on you or slap you. Unfortunately for Jennings, her nurse took that a bit too personally this day. Another hospital worker discovered the woman dead at 1:45 a.m. Jennings met her fate at the hands of a woman we will call the Angel. When the Angel was 15 years old, her family moved to Nakona from Indiana. Doctors had recommended a drier climate to help her younger brother, who suffered from asthma. Her parents were able to buy a dilapidated house on Henrietta Street on the town's east side. In this small town, her father worked as a quote-unquote shade tree mechanic, which is a mechanic that works in untraditional places with minimal tools. So basically a mechanic that does house calls rather than run a shop. Her mother secured a job as a cook at the Nakona nursing home. While in high school, the Angel also got a part-time job in the laundry room at the nursing home to help her parents pay the bills. She was soon promoted to nurse's aide, where she was entrusted with dressing patients, emptying their bedpans, giving enemas, bathing them, and turning them to avoid bed sores. As you'd expect, this wasn't an easy job. Some patients suffered from dementia or were angry they were in the home in the first place. It wasn't uncommon for patients to scratch, bite, or spit at the healthcare workers. But while others saw the job as a paycheck and didn't want to put up with that kind of treatment, the angel was always kind to the patients, said one nurse who worked with her. Quote, you could tell she took pride in what she was doing, end quote. According to Skip Hollandsworth for Texas Monthly, the angel was a classic wallflower. She was modest and unassuming, often dressed in secondhand clothes. One Nakona resident, Dickie Williams, whose father would later become one of her victims, said she, quote, was just one of those girls you didn't really notice when you walked down the hallway, end quote. However, one man did notice, Johnny McLaughlin, a 21-year-old construction worker who approached her one afternoon when she was still a junior in high school. After knowing each other for only a few weeks, she went to her parents to profess her love for Johnny. Somehow convincing her parents, the young couple married in front of the justice of the peace. Shockingly, however, they ended up divorced within the year. Now, divorced before graduating high school, the angel moved back into her parents' home. After finishing school in May 1984, she moved into a full-time position at the nursing home. Her hopes of saving money so she could get her nursing degree from the local community college were soon dashed when she discovered she was pregnant by another local man who paid her some attention. The angel married Leroy Carson in May 1985, and the young couple moved into a tiny home across the street from her parents. Over the next 2 years, she gave birth to her son Curtis, followed quickly by daughter Jennifer. Once Jennifer turned one, the angel began attending nursing school part-time. Either of those, parenting or nursing school, are incredibly difficult on their own, but together they create a hectic life. It was made all the more difficult when the angel's parents, who had been caring for the children while the angel worked, moved back to Indiana to care for her dying grandfather. Working around the clock, she told anyone who voiced their concern that she was fine and could get everything done. 3 years after she began, the angel finished her nursing degree and was promoted to a full-time nurse on the night shift. Stories abound of her dedication. She sometimes brought her children with her to color get-well cards they had made. She always made sure to buy the latest edition of True Story, a romance magazine that could be found at the checkout line, which she would read to patients. She loved the stories about couples finding love and living out their dreams in homes with white picket fences. She dreamed of this herself. She decided to travel 48 miles to Wichita Falls to have a photo shoot done at Glamour Shots. She was dressed in a gold jacket and costume jewelry. When the photos arrived a few days later, she proudly presented them to Leroy, but he was less than impressed. Their marriage was in trouble. By 1994, Leroy had moved out, and 2 years later, they were divorced. Interviewed years after that, the angel told Skip Hollandsworth that she believed Leroy only married her because she was pregnant, and he had told her that she had, quote, become a stupid, boring nurse and that no one cared about her, end quote.
Strangers, I've been sending my husband cat memes throughout the day. It's a not very subtle way of trying to get him to agree to getting a cat. But then Curtis like, cat food smells gross. But then I'm like, not Smalls. Smalls, I tell my uninformed husband, was formulated by two dudes in their kitchen for their friends' cats, and it's made from real ingredients you might find in your fridge, not the disgusting whatever it is they put in commercial cat foods. So not only does it not stink, but it's delicious. To cats, probably not to humans. Although my ex-husband told me that he grew up eating a fancy brand of cat food as pate. And not that the good folks at Smalls would ever suggest you eat their cat food, but honestly, it probably tastes better than whatever they were eating. Yikes. Listen, it takes all kinds, okay? But my theoretical cat will only take Smalls cat food. Almost 100% of Smalls customers report shinier, softer fur and overall improved health after switching to Smalls. But if your cat won't eat it, you'll get your money back. I will win. If it takes 10 months or 10 years, I will be getting a cat and I will be feeding them Smalls. And then Kurt will be like, why didn't we do this sooner? And I'll be like, here, dear. have some pate. If you already have a cat, now is the time to make the switch to Smalls. Head to smalls.com/strange and use promo code STRANGE at checkout for 50% off your first order, plus free shipping. That's the best offer you'll find, but you have to use my code STRANGE for 50% off your first order. One last time, that's promo code STRANGE for 50% off your first order, plus free shipping.
In May 1997, she would meet her next husband, Kirk Jackson, at the Third Spur, a honky-tonk bar in town. As had been the case with her other suitors, this courtship wasn't long. They married 2 months after meeting, on July 4th. To the angel, it seemed like fate. Kirk was an aide at a nursing home in a nearby town. After they married, he was hired by Nakona General Hospital as a nurse's aide on the night shift. The angel also landed a job there, also on the night shift, so they could spend all of their time together. Nakona General boasted 38 beds and was one of the town's biggest employers. The year before the killings began, the hospital had even been named one of the top 100 hospitals in the United States with fewer than 50 beds. In such a small area, the hospital averaged between 50 to 55 deaths per year, something that would soon change with their new employee. It turned out, though, that life with Kirk wasn't the happy life the angel had hoped for. He still wanted to drink and hang out with his friends. He would often invite them over to play cards late at night, keeping everyone else awake. By late 1999, the angel's children, Curtis and Jennifer, packed their bags and moved in with their dad. That was quite the wake-up call for the angel. She went to a public mental health center in the nearby town of Bowie and requested to see a counselor. Admitting she was deeply depressed and feeling rejected and unloved, she also confessed to alternating between irritability and rage. But despite the circumstance and her feelings, she stayed with her husband, Kirk. During one of Jennifer's visits, the angel told her 14-year-old daughter about her mental health struggles, revealing that she might be bipolar. When Jennifer asked what that meant, the angel responded, quote, "It means I could kill you and get away with it," end quote. After that, whenever she visited, Jennifer slept with a baseball bat next to her bed. During an interview in 2007, Skip Hollandsworth asked the angel if she ever had to care for anyone she knew from high school. She said two women who had been cheerleaders, who grew up to live on what she called Snob Hill, came into the hospital to visit a loved one. While they were visiting, she said she had to change an IV bag and that the two former classmates never looked her way, they looked right through her. Hollandsworth wondered whether that was the motivation behind her eventual killings. Was it possible that the angel, in her depressed state of mind, had begun to resent people? Speaking of resentment, let's go back to Mrs. Dorothy Jennings from the top of this episode. The angel walked into her hospital room with a syringe filled with mivocurium chloride and took her first victim. This drug is typically used during tracheostomy procedures as it momentarily paralyzes the respiratory system to allow for the insertion of an oxygen tube. It works extremely well as it wears off quickly, but if the dosage is increased by a lot and the patient isn't already on oxygen, the drug is lethal. Jennings already had an IV. All the angel had to do was push the syringe into the IV, and within seconds, the 100-year-old woman struggled to breathe and then died. Even though her vital signs had been normal less than 2 hours before, and even though her conditions were not life-threatening, no one considered her death out of the ordinary because, well, she was 100 years old. When the aide reported the death to the nurse's station, the angel was standing there, at the ready, and she stepped forward to volunteer to inform the family. When the angel called with the news, Jennings' daughter, Juvine, cried, "But I just saw her earlier that night. Mama smiled at me." 9 days passed before she walked into another patient's room, this time an 87-year-old farmer named L.G. Hudson. Hudson had been admitted to Nakona General Hospital for a broken leg, and in the wee hours of December 20th, the angel injected him with mivacurium chloride. Within 20 minutes, she had another syringe with her as she walked into yet another room, that of Sanford Mitchell, a 62-year-old retired electric company supervisor who came to the hospital for cirrhosis. When she returned to Hudson's room, several staff members were gathered around the bed performing life-saving measures. She shouted, quote, "Y'all, someone needs to check on Mr. Mitchell. He's slumped over," end quote. After the deaths of Hudson and Mitchell, the angel could only wait 4 days before filling another syringe. On Christmas Eve, she targeted Barbara Atterbury, a 50-year-old who had visited the hospital for back pain. Later that same day, she also took the life of Boyd Burnett, aged 87, who had been admitted due to feelings of disorientation. 5 days after that, she injected 80-year-old James Gore in the hospital because he had choked on some food. And a mere 7 hours later, she walked into the room of Gertie Matthews, who was 79 years old and was suffering from dementia and a UTI. In each instance, the angel stood in the back of the room without saying much, just watching.
Strangers, listen. I get it. Some of you love to go shopping. For you, it's like therapy. For me, it's like a slow torture happening in front of a bunch of strangers. And not the good kind of strangers. Actual strangers. That's why I dig Stitch Fix so much. Stitch Fix gets me. My personal Stitch Fix stylist is really getting to know what I like and don't like. When I first moved to LA and was apartment hunting, I saw an apartment the size of an actual postage stamp and said to the agent, "Absolutely not." And he was taken aback by how aggressive I was. Listen, one person's aggressive is another person's clear communication. Also, it was LA and everybody's feelings are super sensitive out there. But not at Stitch Fix. I can tell my personal stylist, "Absolutely not," anytime I want, and they're like, "Got it." And they adjust my style portfolio accordingly. And it's so easy. My stylist sends me 5 pieces on a schedule that I choose, or just every so often if I don't want to be subscribed. I keep what I like and send back what I don't in the super convenient return packaging. It couldn't be easier. And if I keep everything in my Fix, I get 25% off the whole shebang. And it's not just clothes. Stitch Fix has accessories, shoes, bags, you name it. Plus, each Fix comes with a style guide showing you potential outfits with what's in your Fix. So if you're like me and you haven't learned how to dress yourself, you don't have to worry. It's all right there. Dress like a grown-up. Or don't. I don't care. Dress how you want and let Stitch Fix help you do it. Style that makes you feel as good as you look. Get started today at stitchfix.com/strange. That's stitchfix.com/strange. stitchfix.com/strange.
If you're keeping count, that is 7 dead patients in December alone at Nakona General Hospital. These are patients who didn't have a history of serious respiratory problems, and yet who died after going into respiratory arrest. Even more suspicious, 2 of the 7 had stopped breathing within minutes of each other, statistically unlikely even at a much larger facility. As 2001 began, more elderly patients began to die of respiratory arrest, 5 in the first 8 days of January. Seemingly, no one noticed. So the angel became bolder with her kills. Jimmy Ray Holder was injected while his wife sat right next to him. And when the angel's first attempt to kill 95-year-old Oma Weiler failed, she returned to the room 4 days later to finish the job. A few days after that, 2 patients were found within 3 hours of each other. J.T. Nichols was a retired 82-year-old machinist who was well thought of in Nakona for lending money to those in need. Admitted for pneumonia, his official cause of death was respiratory arrest. 3 hours later, a nurse found John Williams dead in his room. The thing with John, though, was that he had only come to the hospital for a sore on his foot. Still, the hospital didn't notice anything, but a few around town began to question the large number of deaths. The editor of the Nakona News told his wife he couldn't remember running so many obituaries. The floral shops around town were doing record sales with funeral arrangements. and Dairy Queen, which sent paper plates and cups to the homes of the deceased for post-funeral receptions, were worried they were going to run out of product. On January 30th, Orville Moore, an 82-year-old former field hand, had called the Angel a fat ass the day before, and now she wanted revenge. After killing Moore, she walked into another room. But this wasn't the room of a retired farmer or machinist. No, this was the room of 14-year-old Lydia Weatherhead, who was brought to the hospital for an appendicitis. With the girl's mother sitting next to the bed, the angel smiled and chatted, all while injecting the teenager with the deadly poison. Luckily, when the drug began to take effect, Lydia's mother screamed for help. A doctor who had been called to the unit because of Moore's death ran into Lydia's room and saved her life. And why did the angel want to kill this 14-year-old? Well, word around town was her son Curtis had asked Lydia on a date and she had turned him down. The very next day, the angel attempted to kill another two patients. Perhaps to begin to hide her actions, she waited until just before the 7 a.m. shift change to slide into Donna Kernute's room. Somehow, Donna was able to press the intercom and whisper to the nurse's station, quote, "I can't breathe. I'm having a reaction," end quote. As the team rushed toward Kernute's room, another alert rang out. There was another respiratory arrest. Down the hall was Lisa Pelkey, a woman who used to hang out with the angel at the Third Spur back in the day. Hospital staff were able to save Pelkey, but Kernute suffered immense brain damage and died a few weeks later. Journalist Skip Hollinsworth for Texas Monthly later posited that if the nursing staff knew the angel's relationships with the various victims, they may have started putting things together. Victims Barbara Atterbury and Boyd Burnett from early January had family members who used to make fun of the angel in high school. Elderly Mr. Mitchell used to stare at her breasts when she would come into his room and call her Nurse Tits. And L.G. Hudson? Well, his son was an EMT who was around the hospital all the time, but he was also a minister who went out of his way to find the angel and tell her all of her problems would go away if she just accepted Jesus as her savior. It could be construed that each of the angel's victims had disrespected her or her family. It may have been a few hours ago. It may have been decades ago. If you crossed the angel, you were on her list. But after January 30th and 31st, four respiratory arrests in only 2 days, the hospital finally clued in that something was wrong. As hospital chief of staff, Len Dingler, began to look into it, a pharmacy technician approached him, telling him there were vials of a paralytic missing from one of the crash carts, and then asked if that was important. The hospital launched an investigation, quickly learning that the angel had worked each shift when a patient died of respiratory arrest. Not only that, but she was often the last healthcare worker to see the patient before they coded. With the facts spread out in front of them, hospital administrators realized they had massively messed up. All they had was circumstantial evidence, and they had no legal reason to fire her, but their safety protocols had failed. And somehow, they still didn't take further action. They didn't assign someone to watch her or install cameras or even put her on a different shift to see if patients began dying during the day. That delay would allow her to take one last life.
Strangers, Grammarly is back, and I thought, why not let Grammarly tell you how great Grammarly is? So I went to Grammarly.com and asked it for a 90-second ad about Grammarly. Do you struggle with grammar and spelling when writing? Do you find yourself spending hours proofreading and editing your work? Well, worry no more. Grammarly is here to help. Grammarly is an AI-powered writing assistant that helps you write with confidence by checking your grammar, spelling, and punctuation. It's like having a personal editor with you all the time. With Grammarly, Grammarly, you can write more clearly and effectively. Whether you're working on an email, a report, or a presentation, Grammarly will help you communicate your thoughts in a concise and professional manner. And the best part? Grammarly is easy to use. Simply install the Grammarly extension on your browser or download the Grammarly app on your phone. Then, start writing. Grammarly will automatically check your writing and suggest corrections as you type. But Grammarly doesn't just correct your grammar and spelling. It also provides suggestions for sentence structure and style, so you can improve the overall quality of your writing and sound like a pro. Whether you're a student, a professional, or just someone who wants to write better, Grammarly is the perfect tool for you. And with a free version and a premium version, there's an option for everyone. So why wait? Start writing better today with Grammarly. Listen, strangers, here's what Grammarly won't say. Not everyone can write good, but with Grammarly, everyone can write more gooder. And you know why Grammarly wouldn't say that? Because it is a grammatical nightmare. Write more gooder. I mean, better. With Grammarly. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Sign up and download for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
On February 4th, the angel walked into a room of a 91-year-old man who had made his living farming cotton. He had been brought to the hospital with a high fever and cellulitis. After discarding her syringe, the angel walked to the nurse's station to report Mr. Parker's time of death. Then she told her husband, Kirk, that his grandfather had died. That's right, her final victim was her husband's grandfather. That seemed to be the final straw. Charles Norris, the CEO of the hospital, sat down with Kent Holcomb, Nakona's police chief. When Norris was finished laying out the facts, Chief Holcomb called the FBI and the Texas Rangers. The first thing the three law enforcement agencies noticed was that they had no physical evidence. They then put in place the things we've already thought of. They placed a hidden camera in the medical supply closet at the hospital, aimed directly at the shelf where the mivocurium chloride was stored. To press charges, they needed the angel on camera stealing the drugs. They also needed to keep all of this a secret. I mean, if she even heard whispers of suspicion, they'd likely get nothing. Several doctors, nurses, and administrators were alerted to the operation and were ordered not to reveal anything about it. Everyone at Nakona General was on high alert. Everyone, except the angel. But they had to continue with life as usual. If you can believe it, staff on the night shift even threw a birthday party for both the angel and her mother-in-law, who also worked at the hospital. At the potluck, they had cake and open presents like candles, body lotions, and a teddy bear. According to Texas Monthly, the angel held the bear to her chest and told her colleagues, quote, thank y'all, thank y'all. Y'all don't know what this means to me, end quote. Possibly feeling secure after such an outpouring of support, the angel filled another syringe a few days later. Its intended target was Donnelly Reed, 61, who was one of the town's best-known residents and a polio survivor. Like many polio survivors, he occasionally needed medical attention for post-polio syndrome. Luckily, at least momentarily, he responded well to medication and was preparing to go home the same day. Except he was still there when the night shift came on duty. It was the early hours of February 17th, 2 weeks since the angel had killed Kirk's grandfather, when she told the other nurses that Mr. Reed was making a snorting, horse-like sound. A team was able to resuscitate Reed before he suffered permanent damage. When he was able to answer their questions, he told them that a, quote, blonde-haired nurse had come in and put something into his IV, end quote. Reed said that before she was even at the door, he felt like a spring was uncoiling in his head. He said he couldn't breathe. Law enforcement now had probable cause for a warrant to search the home the angel still shared with her husband, Kirk. 2 days after the attack on Donnelly Reed, officers found a syringe discarded in a garbage can inside that home. Lab tests later confirmed that it, at one time, had contained mivocurium chloride. The couple were taken to the station for interviews. Kirk said he had no idea how the syringe had gotten in that can. The angel echoed the same sentiment. She told police that she was, quote, genuinely shocked that patients had been murdered, end quote, But now that she knew, she could probably think of a few staff members that might have been responsible. But, you know, she didn't want to point fingers. While they maintained their innocence, both Kirk and the Angel were fired by the hospital. Administrators knew Kirk couldn't have had anything to do with it. As a nurse's aide, he didn't have access to medications, and he wasn't working the shifts when a few of the murders had happened. Nevertheless, it was in the best interest of the hospital to cut their ties with the couple. Kirk packed up and left town. Given that he was not a suspect, he was free to do so, and later told his mother that he had been having nightmares about the Angel stabbing him with a needle. Between the search, the interviews, and the firings, there was no possible way to keep this secret. Rather than hiding in her home on Henrietta Street, the Angel continued to live her life in the open. The syringe in the home was enough to fire her, but still not enough to press charges. The authorities needed to prove how those patients had actually died, and that required exhuming the remains of suspected victims. It wouldn't be until June 2001 that the exhumations began. Amazingly, the Angel spent the intervening months working at a nursing home in Gainesville, Texas, east of Nakona. During her interview, she happily told them that she absolutely loved working with older patients. Clearly not checking her references, they hired her. But old habits die hard. She was fired after only a few weeks after suspicions arose that she attempted to steal medication. The Angel was finally arrested in July 2002, nearly 18 months after her last known murder. At this point, the only job she was able to get was at the deli counter at a grocery store in a nearby town. After losing her job in Gainesville, the Texas Board of Vocational Nurse Examiners told the Los Angeles Times they had opened an investigation on the Angel, but declined to discuss the details of the probe. Arrested while she was at work, the deli manager told the local newspaper, quote, "They have the wrong person. She was delightful and loved telling funny stories," end quote. Arriving at the police station, she was informed of the charges laid against her: capital murder related to the deaths of four people. In Texas, according to CNN, capital murder is intentionally or knowingly causing the death of two or more people during the same scheme or course of conduct. The four victims she was charged with killing were 80-year-old J.T. Nichols, 65-year-old Jim Holder, 95-year-old Oma Weiler, and finally, her grandfather-in-law, 91-year-old E.E. Jackson. With her bail set at $2 million, she was remanded to the Montague County Jail. By January 2004, she would be charged with an additional six murders, which raised her bond to $6 million. The judge also issued a gag order that prohibited the attorneys from commenting on the specifics of the case. The Angel's first trial began in 2005, but defense attorney Bruce Martin requested a mistrial once prosecutor Ralph Guerrero said in open court that no one, quote, "may ever be able to provide a motive, not even the Angel herself," end quote. While Judge Roger Towery initially overruled Martin, he then took a two-hour recess. Upon his return, he declared a mistrial and announced that a new trial would begin March 29th in San Angelo, nearly 4 hours away. In the second trial, the prosecution was careful to avoid their earlier gaffe. According to the Marshall News Messenger, FBI Special Agent David Burns testified that the Angel was angered by patients, especially when they were anxious, demanding, or disrespectful. Soon after Agent Burns testified, Martin entered a no-contest plea on behalf of his client. As the Angel had maintained her innocence up to that point, the no-contest plea surprised many involved. It didn't admit guilt, but it did acknowledge that there was enough evidence to convict her. Martin explained that the defense had received a list of the prosecution witnesses, and among those on the list was Jennifer, the Angel's daughter. According to the Angel's attorney, it was important to her that she wasn't found guilty by a jury, but she also didn't want her daughter to testify against her in open court. In their official statement, they said that the Angel, quote, "to this moment, proclaims her innocence," end quote. They also voiced her sympathies to the families of the dead while acknowledging that closure is necessary quote, if, indeed, closure can ever come for them, end quote. As the prosecutors in the case were not seeking the death penalty, a life sentence was automatic once the defense entered the plea. Judge Towery asked her two short questions, if she was waiving her right to an appeal, and if she was satisfied with the job her attorneys had done. She quietly answered yes to both, and it was over. Montague County DA Jack McGaughey confessed this was the most shocking case of his career, but called the conviction the best result possible. With the trial finished, the Angel, whose real name is Vicky Dawn Jackson, a.k.a. the Nakona Angel of Death, was escorted to the Christina Melton Crane Unit in Gatesville, more than 200 miles from the scene of her crimes. And there she remains, still unrepentant, decades later, with her earliest possibility of parole not until 2042. It was there that Jackson was interviewed by Skip Hollandsworth of Texas Monthly. At the end of their time together, she had tears in her eyes, speaking so softly he had to lean over the table to be able to hear her. She said, quote, I spent my whole life trying to be good. Did anyone in Nakona tell you that? That I did everything I could to be a good nurse and a good person? End quote. Hollandsworth realized in that moment that was probably as close to a confession anyone would ever get from Nakona's Angel of Death. To research this episode, historian Jen Erdman relied heavily on Skip Hollandsworth interviews and subsequent articles on Vicky Dawn Jackson. Other sources used for this episode included articles found in the Los Angeles Times, CNN, and several Texas newspapers. The Catalyst is a production of Grab Bag Collab, created and engineered by Amanda Rossman and narrated and edited by Amber Hunt. You can support us and our other programs at patreon.com/grabbagcollab. That's GRABBAGCOLLAB. Special thanks to Daisy Egan for being our first pass editor and a collaborator on Grab Bag. Music comes from Soundstripe Inc., my dad, Bruce Hunt, and my son, Hunt Van Benskoden.